everybody.
Hey there. I'm Karen Hartglass.
And you're listening to It's All About Food. Of course you are. That's why you're tuning in, because you want to hear, about food, right? Well, before we get started, well, actually, we have gotten started, haven't we? But before I bring on my guests, I want a little pity party here. You may remember last week I was broadcasting from my bed with a fever, and that fever lasted an entire week. I cannot believe it, but I had the worst flu probably that I can ever remember. And fortunately, the fever broke on Sunday, and I am on the mend. But that doesn't mean it's easy. And I hope I'm not going to do any of the hacking that I've been doing most today. So I've got a lovely pot of green tea right by my side. Keep me hydrated, lubricated. And maybe a little while later, I'll moan and groan a little bit more about my pathetic state. Vegans aren't supposed to get sick, right? Wrong. Whoever said that. But I would like to figure out how this flu came to me, and I know that it's something that I will never know. Now on to happier things, because I am so excited about bringing on my guests, Jeff and Joan Stanford from the Stanford Inn by the Sea in Mendocino, California. Are you with me?
Yes, I'm glad you're feeling better.
Thank you, Joan. And is Jeff there too?
Yes.
Oh, great. You guys are adorable. Now, I have to tell you, you know, I don't know you. I wish I did. I love your story. I've known about your place for a very long time. These are all my own little, I'm sorry, mea culpas, whatever. I don't know why we've never made it to your inn. I lived in the Bay Area for about 9 years until the early 90s. And then I commuted there for the longest time. My partner's from San Jose. We visit all the time. I've said almost every trip for like the last 15 years, we have to get to Mendocino, and it just hasn't happened. It will happen.
Yes.
And so I'm looking at your stunning cookbook, Dining at the Ravens, and I really didn't know how the story began, and I hope you can just share a little bit about that before we dig into the deliciousness of it all, because it's something I think a lot of people fantasize about, and few people really make it happen and get their hands dirty or invest the 35 years to make it happen.
It's true, and I think a lot of people, when you say they fantasize about it, they really it's a fantasy world. It's very different to run a business and to have to make tough choices. And we always tried to make the ones that fit in with our values. And so it wasn't always the best business decision in terms of guests, because they weren't always happy when we switched the breakfast from vegetarian to vegan, for example. But, you know, we live here, and we have to have a place that represents us.
And our values.
And our values. And it's been a great life for us. So I encourage people, I don't mean to discourage people that have the fantasy, but it is a challenge. There's many challenges.
Yes.
Yeah.
The point is that we didn't go into this with this particular dream. We did not have a vision. But what we did was quite different than that. We let the vision come to us to manifest as we were doing it. And I understand that people have visions, you know, like that wonderful man, Trump, has a vision of becoming president and, you know, everything, I'm president. We had nothing like that. What happened was, in the beginning, we had a really bad partnership that went really south. We were living in Carmel at the time, and Joan had fallen in love with this area, and we had no idea that we could even get in here. We were looking at more marginal areas where the prices would be less. We were all on borrowed money. Joan and I had $22,000, and that was it. And most of that wasn't even in real money. It was like wedding gifts that we never really turned in, you know, returned and stuff. We'd been married for just a short while, but, well, 4 years. But but anyway, the point is that we have an openness to experience. One of the things is that we both understand is that we can be wrong. So we just plowed through, and when we were wrong, we corrected it. Like when I realized that I was having somebody kill animals and that I wouldn't do for myself, that was an unethical thing, so I quit eating meat. I learned about dairy 20 years later, and I quit eating that. Not that I ate very much of it anyway. I have a leaf in my hair, apparently. I was out in the wilds taking a dog out. But in any case, the fact is that the vision basically manifested by listening to just feeling what was going on this land. And there we have an advantage. We're on land. We're in a rural area. We can walk on grass. I look out on green, or if it's the off season, the summer, it's brown, but you lived out here. The point is, yeah. Things changed, and by noticing them, it changed us. Like, Joan, tell your story about the trees.
Is this in the book?
No.
Oh, it's not. Well, early on here, like when we first came in 80, I remember standing out on the deck and thinking, oh, this is just so beautiful. Wouldn't it be nice if we had a better ocean view or a ocean view? I don't think we had
any
at that point.
Oh, yes, it is in the book, but tell it.
It is in the book? Okay, good.
Yes.
Well, then, so what happened was, I think it was that first winter, we had a lot of rain like we've had just this last few days, and this band of cypress on a lower road literally fell over, like their roots couldn't hold them anymore. It was almost like they sacrificed themselves for my wish. And I felt like the land was really welcoming us in that respect. You can get more esoteric about it, but I felt, and I said this recently to someone else, it felt like the land recognized that we were here and we were the right people to be here, that we had that custodial relationship rather than a strictly developmental and then an abandoned mentality that some people that get into the business have, where they make it quickly and they're not really invested. I think they knew my sense is that the land understood, or we understood something about the land. It was a co-creative thing right from the beginning. And I was pregnant at the time. We were going to have a family here, which is why the original owners helped us get it and made terms that we could manage. They wanted new people in the area that were going to be connected to the area. They saw this sort of trend of outside people coming in, and they didn't want that. They wanted Mendocino to have that same village feel that it had had in the past. And anyway, I'm off the track here, but anyway, that was the story Jeff wanted me to tell with the trees falling.
Feel free to interrupt anytime.
Yeah, feel free.
Just like our children.
Your show.
Yeah.
Well, it's a great story. It's an important story. It's important to pay attention to your surroundings, and your surroundings pay attention to you. I could mention also in the book is you talked about the origin of the name of the restaurant, the Ravens.
Yeah, that's a great story. Do you want us to tell that one?
Of course. Of course.
Okay.
I loved
Jeff,
it.
You tell.
Okay.
That's a tough one to tell?
No,
it's an easy one to tell because I don't even believe in death, so we don't have time for this, but that one. But in any case,
we have plenty of time, Jeff.
Maybe we
can talk about your belief system in a moment, but let's talk about the Ravens first.
No, that's what we're going to talk about. So in 1995, we were visiting my dad in Carmel, and the kids were out ahead of us. Well, actually, I was with them mostly, peddling these little Surreys that they have in New Monterey. And my stepmom and my dad and Joan and I were walking. I was kind of hanging out with my stepmother. Joan was talking to my dad, and my dad points to, and I was there, I saw this, but I didn't really hear all of it. He points to a black bird, which he thought was a crow, because we're from the Midwest, he didn't know the difference. And he points, he says, if anything happens to me, I'm coming back as one of these blackbirds was a crow. And So that was like April 4th. On May 18th, he died. On May 31st, the first two pair of ravens appeared here that have never been here before, not in the 15 years that we lived here, nor in the memory of any local had there been ravens here. There was a theory that, that I learned later that there had been ravens, but that people had killed them all. But there were none on the coast in any case for, I don't know, 50, 60 years, that maybe even more, because nobody knew about them. Anyway, they appeared. There are hundreds of them now. And so that's why we named the building where the ravens originally arrived, the Ravens. And they were on a tree above where that building is now. We're in that building today. Pardon me.
Okay. I love that.
And that's why we have the restaurant named the Ravens. And we look at ravens as I'm an anthropologist by original trade, and I look at ravens from the point of view of the indigenous peoples here that looked at them as creators. I don't have the European view as that they're just carrion birds and signify war.
Hmm.
You know. They're bookend.
And they're also in a lot of systems of mythology. They're kind of a trickster character, and they come from, you know, they transgress from one world to the other in story, and they're very, very clever. You know, they love mirrors. They love to play with things. They're very interesting, actually.
You know, they played on our equipment, which is right actually where the footprint of the Ravens restaurant is now. That's where our compost piles were. And we have a backhoe and dump truck to move that stuff around.
Raven community was just waiting. And when you arrived, they knew it was safe to come back.
Yeah, they waited 15 years, though. Something had to happen that moved them here. Like they carried my dad's word with them.
Yeah. Wow. All right. Now, you've literally changed this place with your hands, digging in the dirt, creating gardens, planting gardens, landscaping, building, reconstructing, refurbishing, so much physical labor and love. And you've created a beautiful place. I've seen the pictures. And now we're going to focus on the food, because this show is all about food and delicious vegan, plant-based food, the only food we should be eating on the planet, and why anyone would choose to eat anything else is way beyond me. But that's one of my mysteries.
Well, it's cultural. It's cultural, and it's part of their identity. I don't know how long you've been, you know, dealing with confrontations about it, but we have, although we were always a vegetarian. We served vegetarian breakfast from 1981 to the time we opened the dining room in 96. People actually got mad because we put it in front of them that we were vegetarian. The restaurant was vegetarian. We didn't have breakfast meats. Their anger was significant. That was the first large loss of guests that we had. I mean, people would yell at me in the lobby, which was brand new. We'd opened it in 96, and about giving them a choice to eat other things. And it wasn't even half as bad when we went vegan and took away eggs. We'd already taken eggs and dairy out of everything that we served, that we made, that we prepared, like scones and all that. They'd been vegan for a long time. People didn't even know they were eating vegan hollandaise. But we didn't. But they basically, if you were local, you would have to pay $2 extra for eggs on something to make them aware. And then if they were guests, we would just do the eggs. But the cognitive dissonance that I experienced of not having been vegan for so long and still serving that stuff, I gave myself a Christmas present, and Joan and I gave ourselves a Christmas present. But I actually, that's the part that I run. And we made it vegan several years ago, and I feel a lot better. I think the energy around here feels a lot better, too.
And when did that happen? When did it go completely vegan?
Okay, all the cooking went completely vegan pretty much in 2007, I believe.
Okay.
And, you know, we eliminated eggs and, well, you don't use eggs in scone anyway, but we eliminated butter and went to Earth Balance in scones. We eliminated eggs and any baking that we were doing. We eliminated any dairy products at all in the process of making food, like dishes. We made our own cheese, or we tried some of the early forms of Daiya and soy cheeses and all that. We found it's better if we make our own. It actually melts pretty easily. We did all that then, and then in 2012 we turned it
You're talking about the breakfast?
The breakfast.
Yeah, because the night was vegan.
Yeah, the night was vegan since 2007. So we had, it was just the breakfast that was a problem for us.
I see.
But okay. I've been vegan since 2004, so, you know, it was a lot of cognitive dissonance for me. I mean, it really was a problem, because I understood the torture and the problems with the animals. And I know that there's health vegans and ethical vegans, and I didn't even know there was a dichotomy when I made these choices starting back in... back in 1985 is when I became vegan or vegetarian. But it was always a question of animals. It wasn't about me. And it was, why do I need to eat this? This is going to cause somebody else to suffer. It would be like, if you can only make this thing by some cook getting burnt, then don't eat this, whatever it is. It's the same thing with the animals. Don't eat it because they're going to suffer for it. And that's why I changed. And we really are low oil to no oil whole foods here. The recipes in this cookbook reflect a reduction in oil and all that, but they are restaurant recipes. But we've been working the last year to completely change all our recipes to using as little as that, being as almost as whole foods as possible. And many of them are in the cookbook, but we're continuing to develop more and new ones. And as a result, we are working on a whole variety of ethnic foods, because, frankly, it's hard to take the Nouveau California, the French California combined kind of approach to cuisine and avoid fat, whether it's plant fat or animal fat.
Sure.
Doesn't really matter. It's very hard to avoid it because they combine. We don't even try to copy that food anymore, but we did originally. We tried to get that essence of that very high-end Gary Dankel kind of restaurant, and I think we were very successful with it. We have a very high rating because of that. And since then, we've continued keeping the food at that level of quality, but with the focus on using whole foods, which means that we now dropped a bunch of things that uses sauces and the like, and actually they're not in this cookbook. We had an earlier cookbook. Those things were not put in this cookbook.
Well, food is fascinating, and over the decades, things that we think were healthy, we discover maybe they're not so, and we move on to new schools of thought. I mean, I remember in the 80s when I was putting wheat germ on everything, thinking that was really good for me, and I would never use wheat germ today because it's not even a whole food. And
right.
I mean, there are just so many things that I remember thinking were good for me. Now, part of the value in any of that is if we really believe it, we get this placebo effect, and it may not have any detrimental effect on us because the placebo effect can take care of that, making us think it's really good for us and the body acts like it is. But meanwhile, in the world of vegan cuisine, there's been so much change, and you both have been so courageous, running a place like this. You are open only to criticism all the time, especially from Americans who want it their way and are never happy. Excuse me. And you have this thing to balance, which is people who are omnivores, and then people who are vegan, and then there are many vegans that if you are not the most environmentally friendly and you haven't thought through every single ingredient and, you know, making it no oil and whole foods and palm oil free and, Yeah, and every little thing. I mean, every food has a story. Every food has social issues, and you know, we can't do it all to please everyone.
Exactly. And it gets to be a bit of an obsession. I mean, you know, I think the advantage we have, as much as it's a challenge, is that we're exposing these people that might never go to a vegan restaurant. I mean, in their, you know, given the choice, they would go not to one. But because they're here and maybe they're tired checking in, they try it and they're so pleasantly surprised often. Or the last night of their stay, they just want to take it easy, pack and get ready to leave early. They'll try it the last night. And we've had people say, you know, we wish we'd eaten here first. This was one of the best places we had during our whole time here. So it's exposing it to more people, not just the hardliners or the ones that are, you know, like you're referring to, that are really conscious of every little thing. Because at a certain point, that actually I find a little disturbing. I recognize that we need information. And that it's to, you know, the end goal is to be the most nutritious and healthful food we can have. But at the same time, it can get a bit, I don't know, it's just me personally.
I absolutely agree with you. And when you're appealing to a wide range of clientele, especially people who don't know this food, it needs to be a little saltier. It needs to be a little richer. It just needs to be in order to for them to feel that same level that they're used to with animal foods.
Mm-hmm.
But we're lucky. We're lucky. We had 60% of our guests come from the Bay Area. And that's a remarkably open group of people, particularly after the last 5-6 years. You've got the millennials are becoming our guests now, and they are much more aware than maybe people would give them credit. I don't know. I have no issues with this whole concept of millennial generation. They are they seem very wise. They're very active. They move around a lot. They appreciate a lot of what we're doing. The really difficult vegans that are around, and there are a few, they're very small number. They understand, many of them understand that a place like this is educational, and that's how we look at it. We're in the process of avoiding all, well, we already look for palm oil bases that's certified, that's not in forests that orangutans are in. You know, we're very careful about all of that, but somebody had to point that out to us that there was a problem, but we've actually been aware of that problem since this stuff got popular, so for many years now. And we've been trying to deal with it, and we're using coconut oil much more now, and basically making our own butter to put in these things. But the fact is that we want to introduce as many people that will be making decisions for other people and also talking to other people that become leaders. We want to affect them. A lot of people are just followers, and they might be the ones that are arguing all the time. You know, they're following a good thing. They're vegan followers. But we need to get to leaders in California and schools, and we get guests from all over Europe and Japan. We need to touch them so that we give them information and help in, you know, passing the word around. Like, I just finished an article on, well, actually, I didn't finish it. I wrote a long time ago, but I keep adding to it when I find another reason proving that we were always herbivores that could eat meat. So it's now 11 really good scientifically based reasons for the fact that we're herbivores. You can find most information on the net. They're not all, the reasons are not necessarily always in the same article, but we assemble them and put them out there. People read that, and they begin to understand what it is we're trying to do. We're trying to keep people healthy, and do that by showing that a vegan diet can be joyful and fun, and when you leave the table, you don't feel logy or anything like that. You've got energy.
What was that word you just used? You don't feel what?
Logy. It's a word meaning feeling heavy and down. Because
okay, logy. That's a good one.
We just have
a few minutes, and I want to jump into your cookbook a little bit, if we can.
Okay.
The first thing that popped out to me was the citrus polenta. We make a lot of polenta at home, and I've never made it with citrus, and obviously that's something I'm going to do very soon.
That's one of our most popular items.
Yeah, it's very popular. That was developed by Domenica Catelli when we first opened for breakfast in 1996. She was the person I worked with. She was the one that relieved me of cooking. I love Domenica. And she's running a restaurant now in with her brother in Geyserville.
Mm. And
it's not vegan. It's not vegetarian either. But she was
okay,
vegetarian.
Okay, boo-hoo.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Exactly.
You did.
That's a hard one for me. I never understand how you go the other direction, but anyway, people do.
It has to do with a cultural identity. She's Italian. I'm not making excuses. She's Italian. Her father was a cook. Her brother's a cook. And it's about money. You can make a living much more easy than what we do. So the rooms that we rent here allow us to do what we want to do with the restaurant. Guests can go wherever they want to eat. But this building is vegan. And the people that live here, we have interns living here, they have to be vegan. We don't allow any animal products brought onto these premises. In the rooms, people can do what they want to. They're renting a room. It's like renting an apartment. But here, this is a public space, and it's a vegan public space.
Exactly. Well, again, you have been extremely courageous, and I'm so glad that you're leading the way, showing the way, and hopefully other people that are learning through being at the Ravens or in other places will follow suit and not go in the other direction.
Yes.
I hope not. Well, what happened was in the late 90s, we saw a huge burgeoning of vegetarians. There were a lot of vegetarians around. And there was a doctor that would come up, Elson, I can't think of his last name, but he'd come up from the Bay Area and work around, do seminars on vegetarian living, and actually at another place, a restaurant. And he quit. One time he came back and just was staying with us. He was not doing that work anymore. And he and I talked. They said, boy, there were a lot of vegetarians around. They all went away. And he said, yeah, they went to the Atkins diet. So they were they were health vegetarians or weight vegetarians or whatever they were, and they didn't have that transpersonal, trans species look at it, which I think is a more of an ethical point of view, where you just don't do that kind of eating because it's so destructive and it's so cruel. And it's hard because every now and then we run into a vegan. The guy comes and says, "I'm just happened. I'm a vegan. Oh, but I eat fish." And I go, why?
Yes.
Fish are, first of all, if he thinks it's healthy, but fish carry a lot of toxic metals. It's the least healthy meat you can eat. And and so that's not an ethical vegan. I think ethical, by approaching this ethically, you've got all your problems solved. You don't have to worry about your health anymore because it takes care of you. And that's what we try to do. Our newsletter that we give to our guests, every one of them, is really an argument for that. And we have good medicine, the PCRM thing in all our rooms.
Oh, sure.
So that people, that just making that one decision takes care of so many problems and gets rid of cognitive dissonance, that conflict within them that, actually impairs personal growth. I found that
Well, unfortunately, we've come to the end of the half hour. But I wanted to say it's very obvious to me how you've been able to, for the last 35 years or so, build this beautiful place. You are fueled with quite a bit of passion for the vegan movement. Excuse me, Joan?
I just said, come see us, Karen.
Oh, I definitely will. I can't stand talking about it anymore. I want to get there, and we'll do it as soon as we can. Look forward to meeting you.
I feel better. Thank you so much.
I actually don't know. Where are you?
I'm in New York.
Oh, okay.
We love New York. I love New York.
We go there a lot. We used to go there a lot. Our daughter was at NYU.
Oh, my goodness. What a wonderful school. Yeah. Well,
thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Okay, and I just wanted to say this book, Dining at the Ravens, over 150 nourishing vegan recipes from the Stanford Inn by the Sea, beautiful recipes, a lot of comfort food-looking dishes, delicious. So thank you for putting that together, and thanks for joining me. And it's all about food, Jeff and Joan Stanford of the Stanford Inn by the Sea. Very good. Let's go on to the next part of the show, shall we? And my next guest is on hold and ready. Alina Furman is the creator of Soup Alina and has a new cookbook out called Soup Alina Soup Cleanse. Welcome to It's All About Food, Alina.
Hi, Karen. Thank you for having me. So excited to be on your show.
Thank you very much, and I'm very excited to have you, and I'm just expecting you to just take the next half hour away, because...
let's do it.
I mean, you come with amazing credentials, being a journalist on CNN. You've been in some pretty scary places in your day, doing incredible things, and somehow you came to peace with soup.
I know, right? It's all about soup.
It's all about soup. And I have to admit, I felt like a real ding-dong. It took me like, I've been looking at your book for a while. I knew you were coming on the program, and I love the name Soup Alina. It's kind of like Thumbelina or, you know, kind of fairy tale name, which I love. And I was, you know, making some little jingles in my mind, but it took me a while, and I felt I'm really a dum-dum that I didn't realize it was soup. And your name, Alina, put together, and when I got it, I felt very dumb. But it's very cute.
It's funny, because when I told my daughters first, I said, how about Soup Alina? And that's the first thing they said is, what, Mom, like Thumbelina? And I said, yeah, why not? Just a modern fairy with a ponytail and like cute heels and a little apron and a little ladle. You know, let's bring the soup into 21st century.
Absolutely. I love names that end in Ina, just not just Thumbelina. I don't know what kind of feelings people have about Thumbelina, but... I've sung opera, and most of the characters that I've sung in the coloratura repertoire, they all their names end in Ina, Adina, Rosina, everything ends in Ina. So it's just a nice, has a very nice, melodic, friendly, lovely sound to it. Soup Alina, welcome.
Thank you.
Okay, now, how are we supposed to cleanse with soup, Soup Alina?
Soups, here's the thing, you know, soups are so amazing for you, no matter how you turn and twist it, you know, soups have been around forever. I mean, for centuries, you know, for generations, you know, every medicine in the world and every healer has always looked, you know, brewed something, you know, like when you think of, you know, healers, you see, you know, like you have this image of, you know, of a pot brewing, you know, on the stove and, you know, things going in there. And, but somehow, you know, here we are in the 21st century and soups have become these, you know, toxic laden concoctions with sodium and fats and, you know, substandard ingredients. And soups, you know, up until Soup Alina came on the scene, there was really not a healthy soup on the market anywhere. And that was really shocking to me, because even when you go to a 5-star restaurant, you know, you're going to end up having a soup that has heavy dairy in it, or if you go to a vegan restaurant, would have heavy nuts in it, like cashews or, you know, some of the other nuts, you know, mixed in there for creaminess. And it was just really, really heavy. And I wanted, you know, I came to souping through my own journey, you know, so I started making soups to heal myself and brought ingredients that I needed in my body to cleanse, to feel good, to feel whole, to feel healed. And I, you know, I wanted them to taste great, but I also wanted them to be medicinal. And so in terms of cleansing, what soups do is they provide you with readily digestible nutrients. You know, because even when you juice and when you eat, you know, when you drink smoothies, for example, or eat raw food, it's all very cold in your digestive system, and your body has a lot of work to do to digest what you have just consumed. Now, technically, there's nothing wrong with that, but because we live in, you know, in a very toxic world these days, and it's reality, and we all know about that. And we can't put ourselves in a bubble and say, well, and I'm going to create an environment for myself where nothing is toxic. It's just not going to happen, you know, because, you know, we can't control our lives 100%, but we can control our food. And so soup provides readily digestible nutrients that are already warm, that are ready to penetrate on a cellular level, and heal your gut, you know, improve your digestive system, give you energy, help you with healthy elimination, you know, flush, you know, your kidneys and liver, and, you know, and really just create this favorable environment that will make you feel better. You know, you will be calmer, you know, you're calmer when you eat soup. It really changes so much for you. It's pretty remarkable. Try it sometime. You know, even like from one bowl of soup, you eat a bowl of soup and you just feel content. You know, you feel calm, you feel happy, you feel satiated.
There's something very comforting about soup.
Yeah, yeah.
And most people who don't know where their kitchen is and don't like the idea of cooking, primarily because they don't know how to cook, soup is probably the easiest thing. It's one pot. And yeah. it all goes in there together. Can't be simpler.
But you have to be very selective, and that's what I'm trying to explain. Because you know, I've come across people who go, "Oh, I love soup too," and I always get excited when people tell me that they love soup. And so I always ask, "Hey, what's your favorite soup? What do you make?" You know, because everybody has their own favorites. And some people say, "Oh, well, I just open the refrigerator and I just see what's there about to spoil. And I open up a can of tomatoes and I put it all in and, you know, boil it up and then throw it in a mixer and it's great." And my eyes literally pop out of their orbits and I go, "Oh my God, that's not soup."
That's not soup, Alina. Soup.
No. In order for soup to really give you the goodness that I'm talking about, the healing powers, the medicinal powers, every ingredient in that soup has to be spectacular and has to be handpicked. Now, not everybody is lucky enough to live in Southern California and to go to the farmer's market every day like we do here, but every town has a farmer's market at least once a month, or, you know, or a market or a co-op or, you know, Whole Foods or international market or ethnic markets, you know, tend to have more fresher produce. And I think that if you explore and find those places, you know, you will see how great ingredients are. And to me, the ingredients are the stars, you know. And once you have these incredible ingredients, you can truly make remarkable soups.
Quality ingredients make quality food with flavor.
Absolutely.
I mean, everybody talks about the conventional or industrial tomato. It's round and it's made to fit on a hamburger and it has no taste.
Nope.
And even though you may be able to get it year round, there's no point in eating it. It's disgusting.
Right.
But when you find a tomato garden fresh from a farm, oh, I mean, it's just heavenly. Every vegetable is like that. Every plant food is like that.
Yeah, for sure. And that's why I also really encourage people to eat in season. And I know we're all spoiled here because we like to have things when we want to have them. But, you know, nature doesn't work like this. You know, there are things that grow at different times of the year. And I think if you kind of go with the flow and enjoy what grows certain times of the year, it's wonderful.
Very good. Now, so you put the soup cookbook together, but you already have a business where you sell soup to the world.
Exactly. yeah, to Los Angeles world at the moment only, but hopefully in the very near future to the world, to the wider world.
The wider world. And for those that want to do it themselves, they have the opportunity to get all of your recipes in this lovely book.
Thank you. Now, yes. Well, that was the purpose. Yeah.
Who came up with the names of all of your soups? Because they really are fun.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, so my daughters and I have brainstorms. We sit around the kitchen table, and one of my best friends actually sometimes comes over, and we just play with words, and we sit around, and we throw different names and come up with something that we all love. So we have our own little focus groups and brainstorm sessions.
Right. Well, here's just a few of them. I'm all artichoked up. You're my favorite. I love fava beans, by the way.
Yeah.
And let's see. I don't care at all what they say. Oh, don't squash my dreams. Oh, cauliflower me, maybe. That's a good one. yeah, I can't believe it's butternut.
Yeah.
Some of them are a little deep. You got to go to the next level there. Really know your history of commercials.
Yeah.
Very good. Okay. So your soup story started, my understanding from reading your book, is that you were diagnosed with breast cancer, and that was your wake-up call to learn about healing with food.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was a scary time. I think, you know, we all go about our daily lives hoping that we're invincible, and I certainly was one of those. And then one day I received the diagnosis that shook my world, and I really didn't know what to do. It was probably the scariest moment of my life. And seriously, being in Afghanistan was not scary. That was scary.
So, isn't that? That's crazy.
Yes,
that's not scary. That's crazy.
I know. Because all of a sudden, you really feel like you're staring death in the eyes, and you have to make decisions. And for me, you know, it really, it was a journey, really. It didn't all snap together immediately. I didn't know immediately what to do. It took time. It took a long time. And, food became, so one of the things that I made a choice about is to turn down chemotherapy because I didn't believe in it. And I decided to roll the dice and see if I can make it work for myself the way I believed I could. Now, I didn't know if it was going to work or not, but I had faith, and I thought I was going to give it a try. And so I dove into research and started researching nutrition and, you know, and all of the things that I had to do to change my life, because one of the researchers, actually pathologists that I spoke with, who tested my my tissue, told me that in order for me to truly heal, I had to completely change my life. And life was not just nutrition. Nutrition was a big part of it, but it was also about reducing my stress, realizing, understanding my emotions, quieting my mind, and learning how to breathe, and doing all of those other, you know, spiritual, emotional things that are so important for us in this busy world. But soups and nutrition were, you know, about 80% of that, because that really what centered me. And like I mentioned before, you know, that's something that I could 100% control, because I could control what I put into my food. I could control what I eat, when I eat, how I eat. And so I started researching ingredients, and I started seeing a Chinese medicine doctor and an Ayurvedic practitioner, and they were telling me about spices and herbs that I had to have in my diet and mushrooms, medicinal mushrooms like maitakes and shiitakes. And I was trying to figure out how am I going to have all of those spices and all of those herbs as often as I needed to have them to boost my immunity, to bring certain nutrients into my body on a cellular level. And again, at that time, everybody was juicing, and it was all about juicing and raw. And I couldn't go that route. I tried, actually, and it was not working for me because I was cold. I was, you know, when I did my juice cleanse, I remember it was April in L.A., and it gets pretty hot here, and I was in a parka with a cashmere hat and cashmere gloves and cashmere scarf and in Uggs, and I was freezing. I was shivering. I was very, very cold because my body was just not responding to it. It was not getting the nutrients. So I started playing in the kitchen, and I started playing with soups, and I started putting the all of the spices like turmeric, you know, massive amounts of turmeric and cumin and cardamom and saffron and all of those ingredients into the soups, and hoping that it's going to be palatable for me. And miraculously, things started turning out. And partially, you know, again, you know, I've researched all of the ingredients, so I knew which ingredients would go with which ingredients and how would they create those healing, you know, combinations. But also, I'm a big believer in energy, and I believe that food is energy. And if you put love into the food you create, it turns out beautiful. And so I literally would spend hours in the kitchen and pour my love into those soups. And I truly believe that that was the reason they were so healing. And to this day, you know, I cook all of the soups. You know, I really believe in that, in that energy. So yeah.
Beautiful. So I didn't notice in any of your lists of ingredients, it never says love.
I know, right?
But I think it's an important ingredient.
It is. Well, my soups, when people, it's cute. When people receive the soups through delivery, they come with bamboo spoons, and each spoon is stamped "Made with Love."
Oh yes, but I agree with you. It's a very important ingredient, and sometimes it's hard if you're cooking with a bad mood because you don't want to put that bad mood into your food either.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Herbs and spices, we're continually getting more science that supports how nourishing they are and how medicinal they are and how great they are for boosting the immune system. And they just taste great.
Yeah. Yeah.
And an easy way to make great soup. Just a pile
absolutely.
Of herbs and spices.
Absolutely, absolutely. And then, you know, you don't have to use fats and oils and everything. You know, you just, you know, you literally, you know, the flavors are tantalizing. You know, it's incredible. You know, that's the frontier that I feel is going to be coming here is, you know, we need to be understanding more about spices because I feel that we've kind of gotten veggies down and we know that they're great for us. But spices and herbs take it a notch up. It's a completely different paradigm.
One of the things I talk about when people want to, for example, steam their vegetables and have vegetables steamed, which is great, but then there's the water that the vegetables have been steaming in, and that's where a lot of the vitamins went. So I always encourage people, drink that water. It's like a nice tea or a nice broth. Don't waste it because it's so good for you. But you don't have that problem with soup. It's all there in the same pot. Now, I have to mention this, and I'm glad you clarified it somewhere in the middle of the book. Dr. Joel Fuhrman is a dear friend of mine, and he's my favorite doctor. And I wondered when I saw your name, but you clarified you are not related. But he is a big fan of soup and encourages all of his followers, his nutritarians, to make soup. So I'm sure he would like a lot of these recipes.
Oh, that would be great. I would love to meet him. He is one of my heroes. So I know I'm very proud that I have the same last name, and one of these days I hope to meet him.
Yeah, well, it's a, I have, I don't know many people who have this name, and it's always a trick making sure I put the H before the R.
I know. I know. That's so true.
Yes. Well, I'm sure maybe many, 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 many generations back, you might have some connection along the way.
Yeah.
Okay. So if people want to, if they want to make your soup, they buy your book, Soupalina Soup Cleanse. And then otherwise, if they want you to make it for them, they head over to L.A. and go to your space. And where can people find Soupalina's in Los Angeles? Where is it?
Okay, so they go online at www.supalina.com and they place an order, and Soupalina flies in into their home or office and brings their soups right to their doorstep.
Oh, you know, it's delivery.
Those wings come in handy, you know.
Well, absolutely. You know, I was mentioning earlier, you probably didn't catch it, but at the beginning of the show, I was sharing my woe is me story of having the flu for the last week, and finally a week-long fever finally broke on Sunday, and now I've just got a little hoarseness and hacking. But would have been nice to have Soupalina in my neighborhood to deliver me some soup when I was sick.
Oh, my gosh. I could get you well, literally, within 24 hours.
Wow.
Yeah,
okay.
My daughter...
Which soup would that, or which cleanse would that be?
So the healing broth, my healing broth, or Lady McBroth, is so powerful. So I would have you sip on this broth throughout the day. I would have you with California Dreamin' and maybe sweet coconut Thai Omai. I don't want you eating too much when you're sick, because I want you just getting the nutrients. So you would be having the broth mainly just to flush all the toxins out. And then I would give you some extra vitamin C and vitamin D. And within 24 hours, you would be just a completely different person.
Well, if you had been on my show last week, I would have tried it and we would have seen what happened. But unfortunately, I didn't talk to you last week. Excuse me. And I hope this never happens to me again.
Yes,
but now,
me too.
Now I know what to do.
But now you know.
Okay. Well, Alina, thank you very much for joining me. And it's all about food and for creating Soupalina. Soupalina, Soupalina, happy little thing.
it was so nice to talk to you, Karen. You're lovely. And
thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. And
okay.
Soup's on. All right.
Okay.
Okay, have
Take
a great
care.
Day. Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
Okay, my pleasure. Okay, that was Alina Furman talking about Soupalina, soup cleanse, plant-based soups, broths to heal your body, calm your mind, and transform your life. And we could all use a little transformation in our life, couldn't we? Okay, so before we go, I was laughing before. I don't know if you were, but I was going to mention that spring is coming in 5 days. Actually, today is the Ides of March. Beware of the Ides of March. And in 5 days, spring will be here. And I thought, okay, after the first day of spring, haven't you been missing hearing the Mr. Softy truck when I do this program? And I thought, okay, we'll have it probably next week. And as I was thinking it, did you hear it? It was about 20 minutes ago, or half hour ago, the Mr. Softy truck came through. It's not even spring yet. Oh, dear. I'm not saying that I like the Mr. Softy truck. It's just, it's been a whole winter quiet without it during the show. And now we're going to be hearing it again. I also wanted to let you know about some other things coming up. Next week is March 22nd. And I will be celebrating 7 years doing It's All About Food. My first show was March 25th, 2009. So what are we going to do? We should have a party next week, shouldn't we? Woo-hoo-hoo! Let me know if you have some ideas how we might
party during the show. And I also wanted to mention, okay, so I said I was sick all week, and my What Vegans Eat blog, I condensed all of last week into one blog just because I wasn't eating very much and couldn't really eat very much. And so I didn't make any healing broths from Supalina, but you can't see what I was trying to nibble on. I made a bunch of food, or let me say that my Gary made a bunch of food. And I wanted to put a shout out to Sandy, who commented on this blog post with a TGFG. Thank God for Gary. Amen for that. He was right here making some really nice, clean, simple food for me, whether I was eating it or not. Excuse me. All right. A couple of things to look forward to. April 3rd here in New York City, we're going to have another Veggie Pride Parade, and Responsibility and Living will be there. So if you're in the New York metro area, you might want to consider going to that. I'm going to that. Another book that I can't wait, that I just discovered, is coming out in April. Speaking of Dr. Joel Fuhrman, his newest book is called The End of Heart Disease, and I know it's going to be amazing. So I know we all know people with heart disease. This is going to be a great book for everyone to read. And the last thing I wanted to mention is we just created a brand new cookie recipe last night. We wanted cookies. We made them, and you get the recipe. It's a very simple maple peanut butter oatmeal cookie. And we use maple syrup. We didn't use any evaporate cane juice or other kind of sugar, and there's no oil in it or no vegan butter. It's just peanut butter, and that creates the fat. The last thing I wanted to mention is you know that I'm a real big fan of the Aquany water distiller. Well, we have a special going on, free shipping, and if you go to the responsibilityandliving.com website, you can go over there on the right-hand side and check out the Aquany distiller if you're interested. Now's the time, because the shipping is free with the code LUCKY. All right, I think I've got nothing left of my hoarse voice. Thanks for joining me on It's All About Food, and my friends, have a very delicious week. Stay well.